When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is getting gas at Shell burning a hole in your wallet? Get the Drop app. With Drop, you can earn free gift cards just by filling up your tank. Download Drop now. Use code DROP88 to instantly receive $5 in points.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday, so of course we are once again inviting you into the vault. This is going to be an episode that originally featured on November 24th, 2015, and it is about the science of whining.
Yes, this is a fun one, and I have a little bit of an update on the whining front because my son is now a little bit older. He's on the verge of turning 6 years old, but still the whining voice emerges. For instance, if he's trying to get my attention, like he's in one side of the house and I'm in the other, he will first go, "Dad," and then if that doesn't work, he'll go, "Dad." There's like a wavering sound to it.
That goes from whine to warble.
Yeah, it's like, "Dad." And then on top of that,
Is it that deep?
Well, it's not that deep, but, you know. But it's deep. It can be deeper than his normal voice at times. But then also, he will have his stuffed animals sometimes whine to him, and it's weird because he's just playing with his toys, but it'll set off the sort of whining parental alarm in my head, you know, where I cannot help but pay hyper attention to what's going on, even though it is one stuffed bear talking to a stuffed monkey.
That's messed up, man.
Yeah, but it just goes to show just how deeply we're wired to pay instant attention to sounds like this.
So is the stuffed monkey being especially attentive to the stuffed bear when it whines?
Well, they're brothers.
Oh, okay.
And they're brothers, and they're speaking to my son, Bastion.
Oh, okay. So is he an especially attentive parent when they whine to him?
Ooh, this is a good – yeah, usually. But usually he's very calm when he speaks to them. He speaks to them in like a soft – a parental voice and reassures them about whatever's happening.
Robert, this intro is going on too long.
Indeed it is. Well, let's go ahead and jump into it then. The science.
Come
of
on. Let's,
We're doing
let's
it.
Wrap it
We're
up.
We're doing it. We're doing it. Don't make me turn this podcast around, Joe.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
You know, Joe, I have a 3.5-year-old in the house, and I grew up with two younger siblings, so I'm pretty familiar with whining. I imagine you're pretty familiar with whining as well.
You know, I don't have kids, but I was once a kid myself and familiar with whining from a personal perspective. And also, I had a younger sister, and so I heard some whining there, mm-hmm. and of course, whining from the other kids I knew. I actually just heard some whining recently, I think, when it was Halloween, and there were, I don't know, maybe you can judge whether this was whining or not. listeners at home on Halloween night. It was a wonderful occasion when all the Stuff to Blow Your Mind people got together at my house. So Robert was there with his child, and Noel was there with his child, and Christian was there with his serial killer mask. And at one point, I remember, I think there was some disagreement between parents and children about whether it was time to go or not.
Oh, yeah. Then you definitely heard whining.
Was there whining there?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to classify it.
There's so much whining in my life at this point. It's hard for me to remember specific incidents of whining unless the material being whined about is really, you know, sets itself apart.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I feel like I'm constantly saying, well, what's a nicer way to say that? Or I can't understand you when you talk in that whiny voice, which is one of those things that I specifically remember hearing my parents say to my younger sisters growing up.
No, of course they were lying to you because they could understand you. They just didn't want you to do it anymore.
Right. It's like the way that you were phrasing that is so irritating and just so grating on my sanity that I cannot acknowledge it. I refuse to listen to you while you are talking in that whiny voice.
So today we're obviously going to be talking about the science of whining. And whining actually does turn out to be a kind of interesting feature of human communication. What is whining, and how is whining different from talking, from crying, from all the other ways we communicate?
Well, it's often described as a combination of several different things. So there's an element of pleading to it, demanding, pestering, and nagging that escalates in pitch. It begins during infancy and peaks. Luckily, it's good to know for me that there is a peak to it between 2.5 and 4 years of age.
You know, it's funny because they say it peaks, but I've read in some of the studies that we're referencing in this episode that whining never really stops.
Like, no.
You carry it into adulthood.
Yeah, I think it's just that most adults learn to curb it and know that it that they're ultimately humiliating themselves if they're whining about something. And for the most part, it is a child whining at a caregiver, but ultimately anyone is fair game.
Well, usually I think whining goes up, right? You don't whine down. The
right.
Parent doesn't whine at the child. The boss doesn't whine at the employee. I mean, maybe they would, but most mm-hmm. of the time the whining goes up the superiority chain.
Yeah, though I've definitely heard kids whining at other kids. I didn't want you to take that sort of thing. I wanted to play with that, et cetera.
Well, it comes from a perceived position of disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, say like, I've been taken advantage of. I've got to whine at the person who at least for now has the upper hand.
Right. Like a whining at another child is generally immediately followed by whining at the nearest caregiver to point out the slight that just took place.
Yeah, yeah. She took a sip out of my Coke. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. She has to give me hers now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's everything. Like, I wanted to be the one to get the fork out of the drawer. I wanted to be the one to do this. I wanted to be the one to do that. It just goes on forever.
Yeah, I can't find my shoes.
Yeah.
So I was interested in how whining compares to other methods of communication, and I actually found a study from 2011 that looked into this. It sort of tried to categorize different modes of attachment communication. That's something that often gets brought up, a term, this attachment communication, because it's not so much something that's likely to occur between strangers. It's sort of a communication between child and caregiver, or it plays on an existing relationship. But the paper was called Screaming, Yelling, Whining, and Crying: Categorical and Intensity Differences in Vocal Expressions of Anger and Sadness in Children's Tantrums. And so it was a 2011 study that tried to categorize the different types of noises young children make while throwing tantrums, and they used high-fidelity audio sampling of natural emotional episodes. So instead of having people try to whine and then listening to what that's like, they tried to say, okay, catch some kids whining in the wild, and what does it sound like? And it groups together under a couple of categories. They have an anger category, which includes screaming and yelling. And then they have a sadness category that includes fussing, whining, and crying. And fussing, whining, and crying ultimately end up being categorized as three stages of escalating intensity in sadness. So you've got a sadness episode that's mounting, and it starts with fussing, which they describe as typically short, flat, or falling melody, relatively quiet, and low-pitched. So, Then you move up to whining, which they say typically contains some verbal content with an up-and-down melody, may also include relatively shrill, monotonous, non-verbal vocalization. So, and then, of course, you go to the old classic crying. It's relatively loud and effortful, typically with up-and-down melody. Breath may be interrupted, as in sobbing, similar to an infant's cry. So they put whining here in the middle of this spectrum of escalating sadness. I don't know what you'd think about that as a parent yourself. I mean, does that ring true to you?
I can see crying's position making sense, but whining and fussing is sometimes I feel like that's kind of a toss up, because it kind of comes down to, can I talk you down from a whine or down from a fuss more easily? Like, which is the shorter route connecting it to normal modes of communication and behavior?
Uh-huh.
And God, I feel like maybe whiny is easier for me to deal with than fussy.
Huh.
I don't know, but it's kind of a toss up. I'm going to have to think about it during my interactions from here on out.
Yeah, take a scientific approach to your child's low intensity distress.
Yeah, and I'll have to ask him. Is this a fuss or a whine? I need to know for the research.
Oh, and another thing I just wanted to say was that numerically in that study I just looked at, across the course of it, they recorded 13 different children featuring multiple tantrums. So there were a bunch of different vocalization incidents recorded. They found that whining was by far the most common of these five vocalizations: yelling, screaming, fussing, whining, and crying. There was way more whining than anything else.
That sounds about right.
But surely somebody has tried to come up with a sort of scientific theoretical explanation to explain the nature of whining, where it comes from evolutionarily speaking, and how it fits into the broader spectrum of human communication and caregiver to caregiven communication.
Yeah.
Caregivee to child.
Yeah, indeed. And there have been at least a couple of good studies that we're going to discuss here, the first of which concerns motherese.
Motherese as in like Chinese. Like a language?
No, well, yeah, essentially. The more technical term is child-directed speech, or CDS. Motherese is the annoying way that you might hear not only a mother, but a father, any kind of caregiver, speaking to a child in their charge.
So it's sort of a colloquial name, like baby talk.
Right. It's kind of like baby talk. It's similar in many ways to whining. The two modes of speech seem to have a lot in common, though motherese plays a definite role in attachment. So motherese, an example would be like, "Hey, honey, I really need you to see about getting your socks on. Hey, honey, we don't actually wear socks like that in this house." So those would be two examples of motherese. And hopefully when you encounter it, you're not encountering an adult speaking to you in this way, because then that can be even extra annoying.
Okay, so I'm trying to note the sort of acoustic or sonic characteristics of what you just did for the child-directed speech. One of the things was that it was slower than you normally talk.
Yes.
You put a little more space in there, and it sounded a little bit higher, like you're elevating your pitch.
Yeah.
What's the other thing? It almost has kind of a melody to it, right?
Yeah, there's a melodic aspect to it. And in early development, it's believed that the melodic maternal speech functions more to elicit and maintain attention by accommodating the infant's very limited auditory and cognitive capabilities. So it, in a sense, the melody is being used as a way to modulate the infant's affective state, without having to depend as much on the actual language. Like, really, the language is as much there for the parent that's speaking as anything.
Okay, so those things we just mentioned in the scientific terms would be what they call slowed production, so slower talking, increased pitch, and then they say, quote, often flows into smooth, exaggerated pitch contours.
Yeah.
That's the melodic nature of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's also, you think of nursery rhymes, too, in this case, except nursery rhymes are even more melodic and ultimately musical.
Mm-hmm.
But But it doesn't, in a nursery rhyme, it doesn't necessarily matter for the young child what is being said, which is why, one of the reasons why so many nursery rhymes have horrific imagery in them about animals pecking out each other's eyes. But yeah, the idea here is that mother reads also serves as a scaffolding for the early stages of language acquisition. The actual words are irrelevant, but the melodic tone is key.
Okay, so they sort of use, like a parent would use this child-directed speech pattern to manage or maintain the child's emotional or affective state.
Yes, yeah, it's about getting their attention. And, you know, thinking back, like in my home, we try as much as possible to speak to our son more or less like he's an adult, you know, to not really do a bunch of this motherese. But you find yourself doing it, especially if you need to captivate their attention. You just fall back on it.
But that's interesting then. Do you feel like when you're inexorably drawn toward using motherese or child-directed speech, does that feel like a cultural thing to you, or do you feel like that's in your bones, that's in your DNA? Is it a function of your evolution?
I mean, maybe both, because as I'm saying it, I'll realize, hey, I remember my mom or my dad having to talk like this with, if not with me, then at least with my younger sisters. Uh-huh. If I'm having to say, hey, Bastion, I really need you to get your clothes on right now and go. I really don't like having to talk to you like this in this crazy, weird sing-song voice. And it's, you know, I don't know. It feels as much a part of background as anything, but maybe it has evolutionary cues as well.
But, you know, one of the things about the child-directed speech that I saw come up in the literature was how you would use different types of melodies or tone contours or pitch contours to signal different attitudes toward
yes.
the child.
Yeah. So on one hand, there's consistently rising contours that are all about just electing attention. And that would be like, hey, buddy, it's time for us to see about getting our shoes on so we can leave for today. And then there's parents prohibiting something. And then you see faster rising contours, which would be, again, like, now, Bastion, we really don't wear socks like that in this house. So as you see, it's still that very much that signature motherese style, but a faster rising contours.
Huh. Oh, man. As an outsider, I give that a Dr. Spock fascinating. But so we got to bring it back to whining. What is the link between child-directed speech and whining?
Well, there's a 2005 paper titled Whining as Mother-Directed Speech, and this it explored this connection or the potential connection. And this was published in Infant and Child Development, and it's the work of Rosemarie I. Sokol, Karen L. Webster, Nicholas S. Thompson, and David A. Stevens.
Uh-huh.
So what they did is they took 18 undergrad students, 7 males and 11 females. These were all non-parents. Because previous studies had demonstrated that there was an equal effectiveness of whining on non-parents.
Right.
And we'll actually
discuss
that
paper later.
Don't have to
have kids yourself.
Yeah.
Just, it'll get your brain.
It'll still get you. It doesn't matter. So they exposed these individuals to stimuli of 6 renditions of the sentence, I want to go to Boston, each spoken by both a male and female. And the rendition, these were the modes of each rendition. There was whining.
I want to go to Boston.
All right. I think that was good. And then there's just the neutral, I want to go to Boston, which I'll supply.
I want to go to Boston.
Well, there you go. You got it for me.
I'm sorry.
No, I didn't realize. No, I'll do the next one. Boasting. I want to go to Boston.
Someday I will.
All right. Now demanding. Give me a demanding, I want to go to Boston.
I want to go to Boston.
All right. And then the next one, question, that would be... I want to go to Boston? And then finally,
in concert?
Anger.
Yeah. I want to go to Boston. Yeah.
There you go. That was a little whiny.
Okay,
give me more
on.
Anger.
I want to go to Boston.
No, there you go.
I'm not very good at it, I guess.
Let me give it a try. I want to go to Boston.
Right.
Still a little whiny on my part, though. I don't know. We'll have to work that out in the actor's studio later on.
Uh-huh.
But so what they did is that they... they unleash these different renditions.
Now, one of the funny things was they didn't actually have kids doing it, right? It was
right.
Young adult whiners. And they said, quote, experience tells us that whining speech, like attachment relations, does not disappear with the onset of adolescence and adulthood, but continues to be used with intimates at any age. Yeesh. So, yeah, so they said that it's employed in any attachment partner or to superior figures in a power relation. That's tying into the superiority thing we were talking about earlier. Whining goes up the chain. But anyway, they said adults were used because they could supply the proper stimulus scripts better than children.
So in each one of these, they also featured a stimulus sentence. So what is being said? What is happening that would elect this response with its appropriate emotional flavoring? And then the volunteers were asked to judge the similarity of 22 pairings, again, of the various stimuli related to going to Boston, and 66 combinations of the 12 statements. So this following this, there was a descriptive rating procedure in which the volunteers had to rate the 12 statements in terms of various qualities such as urgency, anger, loudness, etc. Uh-huh. And then they also took acoustic measurements of everything as well. And they piled all this together into a 3D model of the resulting data. This is what they found that whining speech shared with mother ease. Exaggerated pitch contours, specifically of a rising pattern,
okay,
increased pitch, and slowed production in relation to adult-directed or neutral speech.
Okay, so that sounds like it matches the main things we observed earlier when talking about child-directed speech.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, in a way, I don't hear it in my head, though I can see how it would be true. I don't equate when an adult talks to a child in child-directed speech. That doesn't sound like whining to me, but I can see how it shares physical similarities.
Yeah, well, because the parent typically has order and reason on their side, and the child almost exclusively does not. The parent is saying, I need you to get dressed so we can go to this thing that we go to every day at the same time and you inevitably have to go to. And the child is claiming, no, I want to eat ice cream first before breakfast. The child is making
this
ridiculous statements. Yeah. Is fussing, is whining about something that's completely pointless and has no reason or order on the side of their argument.
Is getting gas at Exxon burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP66 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Now, one of the things we talked about earlier was why it's hypothesized why motherese or child-directed speech sounds this way. And originally, one idea was to accommodate the infant's underdeveloped auditory system.
Right.
But they talk about how whining is directed at adults with fully functioning hearing. You know, adults whine at each other sometimes. So the authors speculate that if we toss out this older hypothesis and just say that both whining and motherese exploit inherent sensitivities in the human nervous system, that might make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, it's about what mode of communication is going to elect the most response.
Yeah.
And it's going to, and a whining child cannot be ignored. Or a whining child can be ignored, but at great difficulty.
Yes, it certainly cannot be ignored. I mean, I have had the experience being out in public and hearing somebody else's child whine, and it's just, I mean, it's utterly attention stealing. You can't think about anything else while it's happening.
You know, and here's something interesting. It's easy, again, the parent is coming from a side of reason and order, and the child is generally speaking on behalf of chaos and just unreasonable nonsense. And yet, according to a 2012 Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology study published in the American Psychological Association, children as young as 3 can distinguish between pure whining and a legitimate need for assistance and or sympathy.
So they can deduce whether somebody's whining is justified.
Yeah, like one kid is whining, the kid standing next to them can probably tell that it's BS.
Okay, how did they test this?
Okay, they took 48 children and they split them evenly between girls and boys from 36 to 39 months old. And then they recorded reactions of each child as he or she witnessed an adult acting upset in one of 3 contexts. When the distress was justified, that's due to physical harm, material loss, or unfairness, when it was unjustified, and when the cause of the distress was unknown.
Okay, so they had something like an adult getting an unfair distribution of toys, like marbles.
Exactly, yeah.
Or I liked this one, an adult getting their drawing cut in half with scissors. They drew something and somebody cuts it up. Or an adult getting a toy chest lid getting knocked on the hands with it, so getting injured.
Yeah, or losing a balloon was another one. Newly acquired helium balloon floats up and it's gone.
Okay, so those are the justified ones.
Yeah.
But there are also unjustified things where nothing really bad happened to the adult.
Right.
But the children could tell the difference.
Yeah, they could level the amount of character judgment, threat assessment, emotional assessment, and empathy necessary to say, hey, you're getting upset over nothing. Uh-huh. Or, yeah, that's awful. Your balloon just totally floated away. That's a bummer, man.
So let's say you've got a child with 2 balloons and an adult with 1 balloon. The adult loses the balloon. Does the child give one of his or her balloons to the adult? Well, that might depend on whether they saw the adult overreacting to nothing earlier or whining in response to something legitimately unfair happening to him or her.
Yeah, in the case of balloon-related stress, the child would offer a balloon more quickly to the adult if the child had previously seen that adult upset due to true harm rather than a mere inconvenience.
That's interesting that a child has that level of judgment, but also this makes a distinction between legitimate whining and illegitimate whining.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder about that because a funny thing I discovered when I was trying to find scientific research on whining is that a lot of the journal articles you can find about whining seem to be coming from a business management or business philosophy perspective. I don't know if you came across the
same thing. I certainly came across a lot of uses for the word whining that were not related to childhood development.
As in meaning that whining is a non-productive expression of distress. And that sort of fits with how I would use it colloquially. Like if I'm not talking about the way a child develops, but if I'm just talking about an adult whining, It's a person who's just, they're not getting anywhere. They don't have a legitimate complaint. They're just, they're just being distressed for no good reason. Obviously, we all agree that a person, an adult or a child, can cry to signal a meaningful deprivation or violation. Something bad has happened that actually matters. and they will cry about that. But can a whine signal the same, or is a whine fundamentally inherently unjustified? And if there's a good cause for it, do we call the whine something else?
Yeah, I found myself thinking back on various outbursts from my son, trying to decide, okay, I remember him whining about this. Was that justified? And I'm really having a hard time thinking of a case where the whine was justified. The only possible example I can think of, and not specific example, but there may have been times where there's been a slight to him by accident, sort of like, say, I didn't give him a snack when I'm handing them out just because I overlooked him, and he catches on to that. He might have whined about it. But for the most part, things that are legitimately worth getting upset about, like the cat scratching him, are going to instantly go to like a fuss level or a crying level of outburst.
Huh. But if we go with the escalation from earlier, the whine is in the middle. So it's either lower as a fuss or higher as a cry. Or do you not go with the same escalation?
I'm not sure I completely buy that escalation graph. I feel like it might be a slightly different or more complex roadmap. Because, yeah, like if the cat scratches him, he's not going to say, the cat scratched me. He's going to outburst about it. Or, you know, he's going to be more likely to whine and say something like the cat's sitting in my spot on the couch, and I don't like that. So I don't know if that's helpful or not. But anyway.
You got to stand up to that cat.
Yeah.
You got to look that cat right in the eye and say, you have four legs. The couch doesn't belong to you.
Yeah, well, good luck, because the cat has the claws.
Okay, well, let's look at exactly how annoying whining is, according to science.
Yeah, and I think this is a good one to hit last of all in this episode, because it really helps us to underlie the raw power of whining.
Mm-hmm. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own? Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you spending a fortune while shopping on Amazon? What if I said you can earn cash back while you shop? Introducing Drop, the ultimate rewards app. Whether it's fashion, electronics, or groceries, you can earn free gift cards just by shopping online or in-store at tons of your favorite brands. Download the Drop app now and start earning while you shop. Plus, for a limited time, use code DROP11 to get $5 in points instantly.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
So there's a 2011 study that came from psychologists from Sunny and Clark University, published in the Journal of Social Evolutionary and Cultural Psychology.
And this involves at least one of the same researchers that we talked about earlier, Rosemary Sokol Chang.
Yes, it does. And I believe Nicholas S. Thompson as well.
Yeah.
The title of the article, Wines, Cries, and Motherese, Their Relative Power to Distract. So the researchers set out to see if humans, including non-parents, are hardwired to be more attuned to whining. So this is how it all broke down. Volunteers were asked to try and complete a set of math problems while wearing headphones, and six different soundscapes were pumped into those headphones. You had toddler whines, you had baby cries, you had motherese, you had two adults in a normal conversation, you had a screeching table saw, and then you had the deep sound of silence.
And you had Lou Reed's Metal Machine music.
that would have been an interesting addition. So, and also just to drive home too, all actual speech was in a language unfamiliar to the volunteers. So
okay,
that way,
so they couldn't be semantically distracted.
Right, they had to be based in the pitch and just the sound, the acoustic qualities of the sample.
Yeah, couldn't be that the words themselves were captivating.
Right. So these were the results. Volunteers completed the fewest problems and made the most mistakes while trying to block out the sound of a whiny infant.
Mm.
This was regardless of gender or parental status. The error rate was nearly twice that of trying to work with a screeching table saw. and it's also worth noting that motherese and baby cries were also fairly distracting. The researchers posited that this demonstrates an evolutionary importance of whining to attract attention of a parent or caregiver.
Well, that's interesting to compare because so obviously whining commands our attention, but as the last study showed, we can even children and probably much more so adults can easily recognize the, I don't know what you call it, the lack of importance or the lack of justification behind lots of whining, if not all whining.
Yeah, and I feel like this is where it's important to focus on something that psychologist Glenn Gehr of EVOS pointed out, and that there's likely a naturalistic fallacy at play here. So just because this is the idea that just because something is a natural product of our evolution, it doesn't mean that it's a good thing.
This is a common reaction I see to I don't know, studies about human nature, human evolution, or speculations based in evolutionary psychology is that they sort of point out humans' tendency to do something that we don't like as natural, and then people react like, oh, whoa, so you're saying it's good? Well, no. I mean, natural doesn't mean good. Lots of natural things are bad.
Yeah, so in this case, this is basically my take home on it. If you're looking at it based on the information we've discussed here, based on the caveat that it may be a naturalistic fallacy, something that's a product of our evolution, but not necessarily helpful in and of itself. It sounds to me like crying, of course, is a necessary means by which an infant, young child, or even an adult alerts others to its dire need, and that whining and motherese, to a certain extent, are essentially crying poured into the mold of language.
Mm.
It becomes a mode of speaking and a way to bait our words with the unignorable power of a crying infant left out in the cold. So anytime you hear a caregiver and a child speaking to each other, that's essentially two individuals crying at each other with words.
Man.
That's my take home on all this.
That's profound.
Yeah, or disturbing, you know. That this is a grown-up and a child just crying at each other.
Uh-huh.
But it's crying that's complicated by language.
Well, I imagine that's a lot of what's happening a lot of the time in a household with children. Because, I mean, the presence of children just ups the stakes in every possible way, right? Like suddenly when you've got a kid with you, things that would normally be maybe a little bit frustrating can become dire. You know, suddenly this is so important.
Yeah, and everything's just harder. Getting out the door, harder to do. Yeah. I mean, you saw when I was over there for Halloween with Bastion, just getting back out of your house and leaving for the evening is this whole ordeal that has to be coordinated with Noel and his daughter leaving. So we're both leaving at the same time so that nobody's
being
cheated.
So it's not unfair. Yeah,
it's not unfair. Everybody's got a completely equal shake in the end of Halloween.
You know, I was wondering about the question of why inherently we find whining and crying so unbearable. Like, you'll do anything to make it stop. And you see this a lot of times, parents just caving into what seem like ridiculous demands from their children just to make the whining stop. And I wonder, I mean, one obvious thing is that it's fear of social embarrassment, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're out in public, your kid starts whining, and you know, you're embarrassed, everybody's looking at you, you feel like you're annoying everyone, and that's a problem. But it seems like this would only make sense for whining and crying in public. Public situations might sort of increase the urgency of our need to stop the whining, but I imagine it still happens in private. You're in the privacy of your own home, and still the child is whining, and you need to make it stop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter if anybody's listening. The whining must stop. Please stop the whining. Tell me what you need to tell me in a normal voice, and we'll discuss it rationally.
One hypothesis that I know I've read somewhere before the episode, I was trying to figure out where I had read this, and I can't. I'm wondering if it was in one of Richard Dawkins' biology books from years ago, you know, like if it was in The Selfish Gene or The Blind Watchmaker. But there is an example of how of sort of the generational evolutionary arms race between parents and offspring. And one of the examples used there was about piercing bird chirps. What's happening when a chick in a bird's nest chirps with this piercing tone until it gets fed or gets the attention it needs, gets the help or whatever it wants from the parent? I know one possible way you could think about this is that the chick is threatening death. The chick is saying, I'm going to keep getting louder and higher pitched until I'm threatening to draw predators to the nest. Mm. And you must give me what I want or I'm going to kill us all.
Huh.
I don't know if you can port that kind of intuition to thinking about human crying, but it makes a certain kind of intuitive sense. I couldn't begin to say that that's actually the explanation. It seems like there are a lot of factors involved there, but is that sort of the deep biological feeling of what's happening when you're a parent and your child is whining? Do you feel predators approaching? Do you feel doom looming in?
maybe a little bit, maybe. I often think about Cormac McCarthy's The Road and the father and son hiding in the bushes, hoping that the villains don't discover them, the cannibals. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if I was there with my son, he might start whining about something. And then what am I going to do? Yeah, I have to give in completely to the whining? Otherwise, the cannibals will eat us.
That's why you got to carve those wood bullets.
That's why you got to do it.
Yeah, put up a good bluff.
So we know this is a topic that almost all of you are going to have some feedback on. If you're a parent, if you're you just had siblings, or you're just around kids at any point in the course of your life, then you're going to want to share your thoughts on this. So, hey, and you can always find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find our podcast episodes, our video, our blog posts. And, hey, if you want to reach out to us via email, how can you do it, Joe?
You can let us know your thoughts about the science of whining or your favorite personal whining and crying story at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Constantly making trips to Home Depot? Introducing Drop, the app that rewards you for every shopping trip. Earn free gift cards for shopping. Download the Drop app now and use code DROP33 to get $5 in points.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.